In a dramatic announcement made from the White House on December 17th, President Obama announced his administration's decision to restore full diplomatic relations with Cuba's communist government. The shift in U.S. policy will include the exchange of ambassadors and the opening of a U.S. embassy in Havana for the first time in more than 50 years. In his announcement, the president said, quote, "Today America chooses to cut loose the shackles of the past so as to reach for a better future for the Cuban people, for the American people, for our entire hemisphere, and for the world." The historic breakthrough, negotiated with the help of Pope Francis over the past 18 months, involved the simultaneous release of prisoners. Cuba freed Alan Gross, an American government contractor arrested in 2009 and sentenced to 15 years in prison for trying to deliver satellite telephone equipment capable of cloaking connections to the Internet. Havana also released an unidentified U.S. spy who has been imprisoned in Cuba for 20 years and pledged to release 53 Cubans Washington asserts are political prisoners. Washington reciprocated by freeing three of the remaining Cuban intelligence agents known as the Cuban Five, who were convicted in 2001 of spying on U.S.-based anti-Castro exile leaders. Most but not all of the nation's Republican politicians openly opposed the administration's opening to Cuba. While Cuban-American U.S. Senator Marco Rubio of Florida denounced the normalization of relations with Havana, Libertarian GOP Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky publicly supported the move. President Obama can ease restrictions on banking, investment, and travel in Cuba, but only Congress can end the 54-year-old economic embargo against the island nation. Your reporter spoke with Peter Kornbluh, director of the Cuba Documentation Project at the National Security Archive, and co-author along with William Leo Grand of the book Back Channel to Cuba. Here, Kornbluh discusses the significance of the change in U.S.-Cuba relations and the challenges ahead for both Washington and Havana.
After 55 years of perpetual hostility in U.S. policy towards Cuba, a president, you know, I think, what, the 11th president since the Cuban Revolution, has finally gotten the nerve, the courage, and, you know, basically the political circumstance to make an extremely bold and comprehensive move to bury the past, a past that involves CIA paramilitary invasions at the Bay of Pigs, covert assassination plots, Operation Mongoose, regime change programs being run through USAID, a trade embargo intended to, you know, to stabilize and destroy the Cuban economy, et cetera, et cetera. Bury that past and put some closure on this sinister history and move towards, you know, a much brighter future in which the United States doesn't try to push Cuba away, isolate Cuba, but actually engages Cuba in a normal relationship in which the United States obviously pursues the same interests that it had before, development, democracy, etc., but under a normal framework.
Peter, what are the challenges ahead? The Republicans, for the most part, with some exceptions, opposed the normalization of relations and vowed to stop any kind of break in the embargo. What is it that Congress can do to throw a monkey wrench in the process of normalization here?
Well, I don't want to overstate how the Republican opposition. There's one very vocal Republican senator, Marco Rubio of Florida, who clearly wants to run for president. He has a vested interest in catering to the hardline Cuban-American community. But, you know, there are not going to be votes there for him for that, because the votes are in the other direction in Florida now. And then there's the congresswoman from Florida, Ileana Ross Litinen. And there are others, and there'll be more when the Republicans take over the Senate and the House in a big way in January. And sure, there's a lot of talk about trying to roll back Obama's initiatives on Cuba through legislation. Now, that could be a long, drawn-out process. If Obama's still president, he can veto these bills. It could get very complicated. But, you know, I think there's going to be a momentum, and I think that the business community will begin to be involved to, and hopefully to a point where they kind of get a foothold in Cuba, and then they start pushing, you know, these legislators to go ahead and let this thing go, you know, kind of like Obamacare. You know, once 10 million people signed up, it was kind of hard to roll back, and you know, once there is it clear that if there's going to be creation of jobs in the port of New Orleans and the port of Tampa, and there's going to be cruise lines going to Cuba and investment and commerce and things that bring people into the fold, there may be you know, political allies that we don't have right now that will step up and help not only keep these changes in place but advance them further.
In short, do you think the Cuban Revolution, David, if you will, overcame all the odds to defeat the United States Goliath in this 50-year conflict?
As Raul Castro just said this last, I think on Saturday, to the Parliament, we won the war. And he's saying that because there is a degree of validation for the Cuban Revolution in arriving at an agreement where they are recognized and accepted by a U.S. president, by the U.S. government, by the Colossus of the North, by the imperial empire that has tried for all these years to roll back the revolution, assassinate Fidel Castro, undermine the economy. And the Cubans are still there, while one president after another that authorized these operations are gone, and now the policy is gone. Now the policy is a policy of the past. And I think this is a degree of validation achievement for the Cuban Revolution. It's meaningless, however, unless the revolution means something to Cubans. It has a historical meaning now. It was an incredible act of courage and fortitude by a very small group challenging the United States and sustaining that challenge and surviving U.S. pressures and efforts to undermine and roll back the Cuban Revolution for all these decades. But now, really, something else is on the agenda. As one Cuban on the street said to me, you know, no se puede comer la política. You can't eat politics. And so economic success in the future is what's going to, you know, really be the legacy of the Cuban Revolution.
That was Peter Kornbluh, director of the Cuba Documentation Project at the National Security Archive, and co-author, along with William Leo Grand, of the new book, Back Channel to Cuba. For more perspectives on the normalization of U.S.-Cuba relations, visit our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.